Chapter 6. Sherlock. The Iterative Procedures Job. Sherlock would have thought that once John was participating in jobs, his interest in pushing him onto every available surface would dissipate with familiarity, perhaps even subroutine deleted before it was completed. The results would be unacceptable. Instead, with him around for much of the time, if Sherlock had known turning John into a wanted fugitive would have brought John to him, there was a 38% possibility that he might have done it himself. Possibly 24%. He was a highly functioning sociopath, after all. There were so many more interesting surfaces available. It was something new to experiment on. Sherlock loved experiments. Here was someone else who wanted to experiment with him. When Irene arranged to sell Charles Milverton, beta middle notes, tamarind low notes, and orange blossom high notes, who was an associate of Dear Jim's, for 56% probability, fake compromising recordings of a certain celebrity, they waited in the air ducts. John whispered, "What exactly am I doing here? It's not like I can leap through the laser wutsits." "You're here to be my assistant." Even in the dark, Sherlock could sense John's disbelief. That was why Sherlock had brought John with him. Also, he looked so sad when they left him in the van with Molly, unacceptably partitioned away from Sherlock. Sherlock smiled at John in the tight space of the air duct. "This particular model of furnace is prone to make loud banging noises when it's turned on." He was quite pleased with that double entendre. Their target was murdered while they were finishing, but nothing was perfect. Since a corpse was unlikely to help them implicate Dear Jim, deleted but not forgotten, what was he up to attempting to bribe John like that? Ah, burned Sherlock's heart, obvious. So they took the contents of his safe before they left. In the resulting delay, John, who had not listened when Sherlock told him that he needed to practice climbing walls. There had even been ivy. John's foot had been grabbed by a member of the Thief-Taker Task Force. 78% probability he would not have been able to shake off the stored procedure deleted. The results were unacceptable. Sherlock grumbled the entire way back. John snapped, "Maybe if you hadn't shagged me until my legs didn't work, I'd have run faster." Why was John angry? He had not been angry before. Irene pinched the space between her eyes. "Perhaps, for the sake of what is left of my sanity, the two of you could learn to turn off your headsets." Mycroft smiled thinly, although he was in no position to judge when it came to talking when he should not. "I entirely agree." Molly blushed and looked away. 98% probability he would be able to get a copy of the recording for his collection. Sherlock was planning on presenting John with a copy on their one-year anniversary, their pair bond, or when he had 24 hours of material, which, based on current rates, would be in 8 weeks. His plans may have did. They so very much did. Involved breaking into a fitness center with a climbing wall. This would have additional benefit of giving John an incentive to practice climbing. When they worked the speckled blonde job, They waited in a darkened room for Dr. Roylott, Alpha Adrastinone Musk, and an overall reek of caustic cleaning solutions. Genetically engineered Indian swamp adder to crawl down a rope, which was dull and boring. Dull. John slapped his hands away when he attempted to relieve his crippling boredom. Sherlock, there's a deadly snake about to crawl through the air duct. I'm not about to play snake and hole with you. He moved away from him. Sherlock brooded about what this could mean in the dark. He may have struck the snake unnecessarily hard with his riding crop when it emerged, resulting in the death of Dr. Roylott. Mycroft said, that was a less than useful endeavor. Mycroft looked at Irene. Irene arched her eyebrows at him. She pulled him aside. Sherlock, far be it from me to give you romantic advice. They smiled painfully at each other. But I'm going to anyway. John was willing to suck you off while hiding in a hydraulic press, while we were trying to determine if Colonel Lysander was... John had taken to calling it the hydraulic thumb job, which completely missed the point. Was forging a currency in association with Fuckwad. He had sex with you in a chimney when we were on that barrel dodge coronet job. Sherlock muttered. It was an Elizabethan chimney. Irene quirked her lips that he was missing the point. Sherlock was not missing the point. It's important. The average Elizabethan chimney is 38% larger than a Victorian chimney. Uh-huh. Irene made a complicated I'd-roll-my-eyes-at-you, but at this juncture, they'd fall out gesture. My point is, if he didn't want to screw like rabbits when a venomous snake could show up at any moment, does not mean that he's not really interested in you. It means he's not afraid of small spaces, but he doesn't like snakes. Because seriously, it's stupid-ass ridiculous how into you the poor bitch is. Stop literally fucking around. Ask him to bond with you and stop acting like a guy. Don't be a guy. Be a man. She raised her eyebrows as if that was supposed to mean something. It was probably 78% chance. A movie reference that he deleted. Dull. Sherlock looked away. He had a plan. This plan involved a one-year anniversary. The magazines insisted that it was important not to move too quickly. Or 24 hours of recorded material of them, a harness, and a climbing wall. He closed his eyes and briefly replayed a segment of swinging on the ledge. Irene hit him. She hit him! You're thinking about having sex with him again. That's half the problem. Tell him that you have feelings for him. Thoughts. I have thoughts. Feelings are chemicals. Thoughts are relevant. He crossed his arms. He went to sit on the ledge outside and think. He was not brooding. Irene should stop thinking at him. Mycroft could stop as well. According to Modern Omega, flirting was a natural part of an Omega's attempt to test the boundaries of a relationship. If an Alpha did not respond decisively to check these tests, that indicated a clear disregard for their bond. With all the sex going on, Sherlock would have thought it was entirely reasonable that these tests were unnecessary. However, John flirted as if flirting were an Olympic competition and the honor of Britain on an international stage were at stake. Case in point, All John had to do was pretend to be a wealthy South American, avidly interested in cycling and gambling at the local in Charlington. Instead, he completely failed to be a South American, and he chatted up every receptionist working at a rental agency in London. If he'd been a South American, chatting up bar personnel to get local gossip, Sherlock could have understood. That was the job. But there wasn't anything to be learnt from receptionists. That wouldn't have enabled them to establish a connection to illegal gambling at Charlington Hall, in addition to the inhabitants' rather moronic attempt to enforce a bonding, which was not legal, as both participants had to say, "I do." Later, their client thanked them profusely. After the fact, for some reason, this set both Molly and John off laughing about, "Bonding is what brings us together today," and the dread pirate Roberts. For the rest of the job, they kept saying, "As you wish." That came much later. He watched the relevant movie and read the relevant book. He understood that "as you wish" meant "I love you." He wasn't quite sure he could say "as you wish" back. He was a sociopath. But he was highly functioning. Maybe he could say it and mean it. Before he educated himself, Sherlock spent the evening educating John on how to be South American. In the midst of education, John had a very interesting idea, which he refused to articulate verbally. Given John's greater level of sexual experience and the general imbecility of the population, Sherlock wasn't quite sure how he'd gotten that greater experience, if he was so uncomfortable simply stating what he wanted. Sherlock could tell, but Sherlock actually paid attention. His research was of no help, as there was contradictory advice on gameplay and relationships, which, since it would be impossible to hide anything from Sherlock, made no sense. John would be better off simply stating what he wanted. In the morning, John cracked yawns, but he still had to go be a South American with an avid interest in bicycling and gambling. They sent John into Mr. Carruthers' illegal gambling enterprise in Charlington Hall. Sherlock smiled from where he was pouring drinks, as John winced in his seat through his first few rubbers. They stole the gambling den. Sherlock mused that, based on his reading, the level of their sexual activity was much more in line with a breeding pair than a courting pair, but John had said on more than one occasion, one of those while he was in heat, and therefore even less. His lying was pathetic, likely to attempt to obfuscate the truth, that Sherlock could not have bred him during John's artificial heat. Colonel Moran arrived, which was when things became very interesting. Dear Jim had sent her to collect his cut. Dear Jim shouldn't send an old shikari card shark like Moran to collect dues when there were games of chance at play. Moran cheated at cards. She was very good. Irene was better. Mycroft was dull and Mycroftish. Sherlock was brilliant. John made a very useful distraction. John winced the entire trip home. He kept glancing at Sherlock and blushing. At each blush, Sherlock felt something inside him unspool. Their pair bonding was going very well. Perhaps he could say, "as you wish,"
and mean it. Perhaps a sociopath could. Perhaps, maybe. Maybe. He could try.
Sherlock hadn't yet had an opportunity, although he very much looked forward to that opportunity, to observe John's regular heat cycle. But, according to Sherlock's plan, 1 minute and 45 seconds after he'd shagged John into an amenable frame of mind, on the occasion of their one-year anniversary, or after he'd assembled 24 hours of recorded material, following his agreement to bond with him, surely a formality given the intensity of their pair bonding. But normal people were often sentimental about being asked. He would get John's agreement to breed with him during his next heat. It would have been preferable, of course, to have cloned John. He really wished he hadn't caused Dr. Roylott's death. But as this wasn't possible, a child would be the next best option. He or she would say amazing and incredible, and Sherlock would teach them how to pick locks, which were currently beyond John, and what parent didn't want their child to exceed their own abilities. And their children would become teenagers and attempt to rebel in really obvious ways, as their logic circuits would not yet be developed, and he would teach them better ways to rebel. It would be absolutely perfect. On the occasion of John's promise to bond, Sherlock would give John a gift. Sherlock liked giving John gifts. It made him think of Mother bringing Father ever more interesting presents when he visited. He reviewed his memory archives further. His father never actually responded well to those gifts. Date time 1987, 12 OTT 13, UTC 800.
"I don't need you to bring me a dolly. I can make a dolly."
Date time 1988, 01, 19T 1401, UTC 800.
"Stop endangering our family with your reckless behavior."
Odd. In the end, it was Father's flawless, if annotated, forgeries that resulted in an issue. Although, perhaps the blame could be placed squarely on Cousin Elfinda's low notes of ginger and coriander, middle notes of beta and edrisdol, high notes of juniper berry. Poorly executed provenance. There had also been the incident deleted, after which there had been no more presence, and Sherlock went to live with Mummy. Recording stopped. Memories restored to archives and deleted from the Actor of Memory Palace records. Perhaps his parents were not the best role models. They never said, "As you wish." John had indicated that he was not interested in the Lapland Strix nebulosa owl, but from his invisible, unless the watcher were dull Mycroft, uninterested Irene, dear Jim, who must be kept away from John or Sherlock. His smile said that he might think that was the perfect gift on the occasion of the plighting of their troth to bond. John winced and shifted in his seat and smiled his special just for Sherlock, although observable by some few others, smile. He was definitely getting a Lapland owl. In his memory palace, Sherlock ran a simulation. Sherlock was hanging from the very same harness that he had used, currently stored behind a Protec rotating disc design lock in Zurich. John's legs were wrapped around him, while Sherlock was safely embedded inside of him. He was calling Sherlock's name. Recalibrate. He was screaming Sherlock's name while target shooting, while a Lapland owl was flying across the night sky. Sherlock dedicated a stored procedure to calculate the best way to achieve the simulation. He came out of his simulation at John's startled yelp, "Oh, Sherlock!" Sherlock appeared to have John's phallus in his mouth. He licked it while rubbing his neck against John's thigh, marking him with his scent. "This is a private car, and the train will not arrive at our destination for 23 minutes." Oh, God! John's head rolled back as Sherlock resumed and swallowed him down entirely, which, as he was an Omega, was easy to do, and Sherlock understood if he was unable to return the favor entirely. Oh, God, Sherlock! Sherlock liked it when John called his name in association with God. It meant that he viewed their pair bond as a spiritual connection, as ridiculous as that was. But if it made John happy, then Sherlock could be, in a sociopathic way, pleased for him. Sherlock hummed around John. Perhaps a pair of mated owls. He needed to verify that owls mated for life.